allegations for allegedly a higher pay offer by the Independent School Teachers Review Body, a decision that unions say risks dragging out the current dispute.
Part of the argument here is how a pay rise should be paid for. The government says schools should use their existing budgets to fund any pay increases. But the teachers have been pushing back, saying the school budgets are already stretched and that any wage rise should be fully funded by the government.
And it's not just the teachers' unions who aren't being heard. Also, workers across the public sector, such as transport and health, who have supported each other over the months. Solidarity that has scared the government into responding with a set of draconian laws to make it difficult for strikes to take place. In an atmosphere of uncertainty and with inflation still high, the strikers here are defiant, saying they will push ahead with industrial action until their demands are met. Saeed Bourizza, London.
The burning of the Holy Quran in Sweden has ignited a protest in the capital Sana'a, where U.S. and Israeli flags were set on fire in the streets. Protesters also denounced the latest military operations by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Members of the Palestinian-based Islamic Jihad resistance movement also attended the rally. They called on the Muslim world to unite and counter the Israeli occupying forces.
We came out to tell the world that we are with Palestinians and with Jenin refugee camp, and we are ready to support them. We in Yemen are ready to go to war with the Israeli enemy, who only seems to understand the language of war and violence.
We came out today to call on the Muslim world to defend the Holy Quran and to support the Palestinian cause, which is the Muslim cause. This is an obligation for Muslims to strive and revive and unite against the enemies of Allah.
Some observers believe Israelis, along with the West, have a hand in promoting those who insult Islam.
The individuals who burned the Holy Quran or who insulted Islam represent the aspirations and stance of the West, which promotes the burning of Quran and protects those who engage in such activities even on the Eid holiday. This is done just to insult Muslims worldwide. We will no longer stay silent.
Many Yemeni protesters we spoke with expressed their willingness to go to war with the Israeli regime and any state that supports insulting Muslims' holy book or occupying Muslim holy lands.
Israeli officials say the military operations in Jenin aim to strike what they call a terrorist hub in the occupied West Bank city. Now the protesters here say the Muslim world should become united against what they describe the terrorist Israeli regime. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
The Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the largest of its kind in Europe. President Zelensky has recently warned that Russia has mined it and is imminently planning to create a radiation leak. The IAEA, in a recent visit, say they saw no evidence of those claims, and Russia denies it, warning Ukraine may attempt a terrorist attack of their own.
The power plant. Now, both sides are clearly, in one way or another, taking the potential damage or destruction of it very seriously. Recently, of course, the Novokakhovka dam was blown up, also along the Dnipro River. Whoever blew that up clearly has very little interest in the safety of local people and of potential ecological disaster. And as this war continues to escalate, many do fear that this plant really is under threat.
Built in the Soviet era and with likely strong Russian anti-air defense, the destruction of the plant would not be easy. Risk has also been mitigated by the reactors being placed in cool shutdown. There is more of a fear that damage around the reactors themselves can lead to a radiation leak. Ukraine has tried hard to retake the plant. In October last year, 600 Ukrainian special forces reportedly crossed the Vaskakovka reservoir in boats in a failed and bloody attempt. The reservoir has now been turned into vast mudflats due to the blowing up of the dam. There is evidence of Ukrainian shelling around the plant, particularly in the nearby town of Energodar, although recent months have been quiet. One shell landed outside the central administration last year. The mayor tells me the plant is secure, but that he fears an attack. I asked him why Ukraine would want to damage it. As well as concerns of a human and ecological disaster, There is an even greater fear that an attack can lead to another dangerous escalation of the conflict. Some officials in the US and UK have warned that a radiation leak would trigger Article 5 of the NATO treaty, meaning NATO would respond as if it were an attack on NATO itself. While some may be plotting an attack, most in the region and beyond will be hoping that the plant stays out of the news. Jenny Miller-Zafferosia.
The Turkish president has condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden, saying such an act cannot be evaluated as a freedom of expression. Erdogan hinted that Sweden cannot join NATO while facilitating acts of Islamophobia and harboring terrorists.
The fact that desecration of the Quran took place under police protection in Sweden is a calamity, just as setting fire to church, synagogue or temple of another faith is not freedom. So there can be no freedom to burn the Quran.
Salwan Mumika, a Swedish from Iraqi origins, burned a copy of the Holy Book in Stockholm under police protection. Salwan had already threatened to do so and was able to get a permit from the Swedish government to initiate his act in front of Stockholm's central mosque. This is not the first time such an incident takes place, with the approval of the Swedish government and the protection of its police. This incident comes as Turkish and Swedish foreign ministers and intelligence officials are set to meet in NATO headquarters in Brussels to discuss Sweden and Finland's accession to the bloc. Analysts say Turkish officials will be putting their security concerns and the latest incident on the table.
The incident of burning the Quran and Erdogan's condemnation came a week before a scheduled meeting between the Swedish and Turkish foreign ministers in Brussels to discuss Sweden's accession to NATO. Turkey had suspended talks in January with Sweden after a similar incident took place outside the Turkish embassy in Stockholm. There are two main issues preventing Turkey from accepting Sweden's accession to NATO. One is allowing such incidents to take place, giving permits to do provocation. The second is Sweden's support of PKK members, which Turkey considers as a terrorist group and demands the extradition of their leaders. Turkey cannot hold Sweden's accession to NATO anymore. However, I believe the upcoming meeting will witness an agreement of some sort of, for Turkey cannot step back at this point from its requests.
To join NATO, Sweden needs the approval of all the bloc's current members, including Turkey. Despite NATO leaders showing optimism over Swedish accession to the bloc before a summit later this month, Turkey, who has the second largest army in the bloc, continues to refuse giving its approval. However, it all depends on the meeting of July 6. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After 2 days, Israeli forces began withdrawing from the refugee camp of Jenin, north of the occupied West Bank, after carrying out one of their large-scale military operations since 2002, where 12 Palestinians were killed and hundreds were wounded. However, clashes on the outskirts of the refugee camp were still taking place, and Israeli forces were still stationed in many areas. About 3,000 people have so far left the camp after the Israeli regime threatened to destroy their homes. Jenin residents are now taking shelter in hospitals, schools, and other places in the city. According to UN figures, some 15,000 Palestinians live in Jenin refugee camp.
We expect that the confrontation will be wider and because of the Israeli policy, because of the Israeli aggressive behavior, and because of this fascist government whose ministers are declaring themselves as fascists and are saying that Palestinians have one of three options, either to immigrate or die or accept a life of subjugation to Israeli fascism. That's something that Palestinians will never accept and will never stop their struggle for their freedom.
It says the raid will be underway as long as the exchange of fire continues. The military says it has identified 10 additional targets to destroy in Jenin refugee camp. It says the mission must be accomplished, that is targeting Palestinian fighters, arresting those described as wanted individuals, and capturing their ammunition. Palestinians say Israel is committing war crimes in the refugee camp in an effort to prevent future resistance and bringing down the Jenin Brigades, the newly formed resistance group that's comprised of fighters from different Palestinian armed groups.
The situation in Jenin and the period of the Israeli military aggression depends on what is going on the ground. Israel is seeking an achievement, military achievement, by maybe killing the biggest number of fighters there. But this thing is not happening now. So the options of Israel are getting narrow and narrow by time. If they fail to achieve this, it could be a failure for the total aggression in Jenin.
Palestinians have staged a general strike across the occupied West Bank, including the city of Al-Quds, to protest the ongoing Israeli large-scale operation in Jenin. The strike has led to the suspension of all economic activities and closure of educational institutions across the occupied West Bank. Shops and private institutions in Palestinian areas also closed down. The Israeli regime might succeed in increasing the sense of satisfaction in its community after Jenin's military raid. However, it might not be aware that what they see as achievements will definitely lead to a fertile ground to raise another generation adherent to the resistance, not only in Jenin, but across the occupied West Bank. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Facing punitive measures from their employers and the government, thousands of workers and their labor union leaders rallied in the South Korean capital, Seoul, on Monday, demanding the resignation of President Yoon Suk-yeol.
What on earth is this government doing? Are they saying that it's a regime only for the rich, cutting corporate taxes, freezing workers' wages, and violating workers' rights? That's why we cannot tolerate Yoon Suk-yeol's regime.
President Yoon came to office promising pro-business policies. Unions have been raided and their leaders charged with holding illegal demonstrations. In minimum wage negotiations, labor leaders called for a 27% increase to $9.50 per hour, with businesses offering a wage freeze at $7.50 per hour. Talks have been suspended. Monday's walkout involved delivery drivers and appliance repair technicians.
It's not just the minimum wage, but also increasing working hours from 52 to 69 per week and changing to a performance and incentive-based salary system. These negative labor reforms are forcing us to reassert our rights.
Business leaders suggest the strikes are politically motivated and illegal. Meanwhile, at the National Assembly, the Democratic Party is seeking legislation to guarantee bargaining rights and greater freedom of assembly. The so-called militant umbrella Korea Confederation of Trade Unions has said this labor action will continue through July 15th. The walkouts will include workers from across industries, across the economy, and include also evening candlelight vigils with as many as 500,000 workers across South Korea participating. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Pope Francis has said he feels indignant and disgusted at the desecration of the Holy Quran that took place in Sweden last week. The head of the Holy See's remarks were made in an interview with United Arab Emirates newspaper Al Ittihad, published on Monday. In the interview, the pontiff also added that any book considered holy must be respected out of respect for those who believe in it, and freedom of expression should never be used as an excuse to despise others.
Pope Francis is clearly distancing himself from the sacrilegious Quran burning, and it is not the first time he slams anti-Islam actions. The Pope has also condemned freedom of speech when it is used to attack Islam and the Quran.
Last week's Quran burning by an Iraqi citizen residing in Sweden has sparked an outcry and protests by Muslims across the world. The sacrilegious act occurred after Swedish police allowed it under the pretext of upholding free speech protections. A few days later, the Swedish government condemned these actions, admitting that such Islamophobic acts can be offensive to Muslims.
Regardless of the religion, we must respect all beliefs. Christians, Muslims, there is no difference. All religions must be respected, and what happened in Sweden should be condemned.
What the Pope said is how everyone should see it. In my opinion, respect for all religions must be the rule number one. There is not much to add.
The act of desecration of the Holy Quran that took place in Sweden last week resulted in strong condemnation from several Muslim and non-Muslim states. A number of countries, including Iraq, Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, and Morocco, have summoned Swedish ambassadors in protest at the desecration, while Iran has halted the dispatching of a new envoy to Stockholm, Max Civili, Rome.
زیارت قدیر. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Salam alaikum. Here is the fourth and last part of the memorable ziyarat of Qadir, or standard form of salutation to the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, which we have been presenting you for the past 3 days. Please stay tuned. My master, it was through you that the truth prevailed, while the people disregarded it, and you expounded the precepts of Islam after they had become obliterated and effaced. Thus you were a forerunner both in waging jihad for the affirmation of the revelation, and yours is the merit of waging jihad for the sake of realizing its meanings. Your enemies are the enemy of Allah, deniers of the Prophet of Allah, who summon to untruth, judge unjustly, usurp power, and invite their confederates to hellfire. And there was Ammar, who, as he fought, cried out between the ranks of the confronting armies, "Come on, let's set out for paradise." When he asked for water, he was given milk to drink, whereat he glorified God and said, "He, the Prophet of Allah, may Allah bless him and his family, had told me, 'Your last drink in the world will be that of curdled milk, and you will be slain by the rebellious party.'" Thereupon, Abul Adiya al-Fazari encountered him and slew him, and may Allah's curse and that of his angels and all his prophets be upon Abul Adiya, and on those who drew their swords against you, and on those against whom you, O Commander of the Faithful, drew your sword from among the polytheists and the hypocrites, until the day of retribution, as well as on those who view with approval what offended you and did not decry it, turning away their eyes without disapproving, or provided their support against you through deed or word, or denied you their help, or deserted their duty of waging jihad alongside you, or those who belittled your merits, contested your right, or regarded as your equals such persons over whom Allah had given you a greater right than they had over themselves. May Allah's blessings, His mercy, His bounties, and His greetings and salutations be upon you and the immaculate imams of your descent. Indeed, He is the all-praiseworthy and all-glorious. But what is more amazing and more atrocious after the denial of your right is the wrongful dispossession of the orchard of Fadak from Zahra, the truthful and the pure one, the noblest of the world's women, and the rejection of your testimony and that of your illustrious sons and the progeny of the Mustafa, may Allah's blessings be upon you, while Allah, the Most High, had elevated your rank over the entire Ummah and exalted your station, and He had made manifest your excellence and honored you above all the world's denizens. keeping away all impurity from you and purifying you with utmost purification. Allah the Almighty and Glorious has said, "Indeed, man has been created covetous. He is anxious when an ill befalls him, and grudging when good comes his way. All are such except the prayerful." Thus Allah the Most High made his Prophet an exception to that, as well as you, O Chief of the Legatees, and excluded all other people. So how misguided were those who wronged you with respect to your right and then, for the sake of deception, assigned you the share of the kinsmen while denying it to its rightful claimants. So when temporal authority came into your hands, you let the situation remain as it was before in regard to your rights and those of the Prophet's family, disregarding them for the sake of your reward with Allah. So your ordeal with respect to these two things was like the ordeal of the prophets, may peace be upon them, in their loneliness and absence of helpers. Your conduct in sleeping on the prophet's bed was like that of Ishmael, peace upon him, when you assented and obeyed, as he did, patiently and seeking God's pleasure, when Abraham said to him, "My son, I see in a dream that I am sacrificing you. See what you think." He said, "Father, do whatever you have been commanded. If Allah wishes, you will find me to be patient." And so were you when the Prophet, may Allah bless him and his family, bade you to sleep in his bed, and in this manner you shielded him from harm by risking your own life. You were quick to comply, having obediently prepared yourself mentally to be killed, whereupon Allah, the Most High, appreciated your obedience and expressed the gracefulness of your action in his words, "May his name be glorified." And among the people is he who sells his soul seeking the pleasure of Allah. Yet again, your ordeal during the Battle of Siffin, when the scriptures were raised on spears as a deceptive stratagem, whereupon doubts arose in the minds and the truth was set aside and conjecture was followed, similar to the ordeal of Aaron when he was appointed by Moses to lead his people, whereupon they forsook him while he kept calling them, saying, "O my people, you are only being tested by it. Indeed, your Lord is the All-Beneficent, so follow me and obey my command." They had said, "We will keep on clinging to it until Moses returns to us." Such was your case when the scriptures were raised on spear points and you were saying, "O my people, you are being misled and deceived by this means." But they disobeyed you and demanded the appointment of arbiters, whereat you declined their demand and deploring their conduct before Allah, and let them alone. So when the truth was revealed and their wrong stand was discredited, and they admitted their mistake and oversight of the goal. But then they fell into disagreement and blamed on you the folly of arbitration, which you had opposed and they had desired and which you had warned them against, while they considered it legitimate, and held you responsible for the sin that they had committed, although you were on the path of insight and guidance and they were in error and blindness. Yet they persisted in their hypocrisy and perversity until Allah made them taste the evil consequences of their conduct. Those who opposed you became wretched and perished, and God slew them with your sword. He revived through your proofs those who were felicitous and they were rightly guided. May Allah's blessings be upon you at every beginning and end of your days and during all your movements and pauses. No eulogizer can encompass your merits and no detractor can obscure your excellences. You are the best of the creatures with regard to worship, the most dedicated in piety, and the most zealous in defending the faith. With your efforts you maintain the laws of Allah, and with your sword subdued the armies of the renegades. With your hands you extinguish the flames of war, and with your discourses removed the veils of doubt, separated the adulterating falsehoods from the pure truth without being deterred by the blame of any blamer in any matter pertaining to Allah. The commendations of Allah the Most High suffices you to do without the praise of any admirer and compliments of any praiser. And Allah the Most High has said, "Among the faithful are men who fulfill what they have pledged to Allah. Of them are some who have fulfilled their pledge, and of them are some who still wait and they have not changed in the least. Having seen that you had to fight the perfidious, the perverse, and the renegades, and that the prophecy of the Prophet of Allah, may Allah bless him and his household, had come true in what he had told you, and being content that you had fulfilled your pledge to him, you would say, 'Is it not the time yet for this beard of mine to be dyed in the blood of this head of mine? Or when will the most wretched man from among these people rise up?' You were convinced that you possessed manifest proof from your Lord and full insight of your own affair, and that you will meet Allah rejoicing in the bargain you had made with him, and that is the great success." O Allah, let your anathema, accompanied with all your curses, be on those who slew your prophets and the legatees of your prophets, and make them enter the flames of your fire. Let your curse be on those who usurp the rights of your wali, refused to acknowledge his covenant, and opposed him after acknowledging and being certain of his authority on the day when you perfected the religion for them. O Allah, let your curse be on those who killed the commander of the faithful, and those who wronged him, and their followers and supporters. O Allah, bring down your terrible curse on those who wronged Hussein, and those who slew him, as well as those who followed and helped his enemies, those who approved of his murder, and those who forsook him. O Allah, let your curse be on the one first to wrong the family of Muhammad, blessings of God upon his progeny, those who denied them their rights. O Allah, single out for your curse until the day of resurrection the first one who wronged the family of Muhammad and usurped their rights, as well as those who followed his policies. O Allah, bless Muhammad, seal of the prophets, and Ali, chief of the legatees, and his immaculate progeny, and appoint me to be amongst their adherents, among those who obtain victory and security through their wilaya, and who will have no fear, nor will they ever grieve. Dear listeners, what you heard was the fourth and last part of our special program of the past 4 days, and a special ziyarah of the blessed day of Qadir for the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Thank you. option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Since the beginning of this year, 186 Palestinians on the West Bank have been martyred, and that's not counting those who were killed in Gaza. And for the first time in 18 years, the Israeli regime attacked Jenin from the air in drone attacks. All of this is taking place while the land theft and destruction of homes and lands continue by the Zionists, and the overall oppression by the regime seems to get worse by the day. We're going to take a look at all of this on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Out of Berkeley, Paul Rudy, co-founder of Free Palestine Movement. Out of Tripoli, Mustafa Fatouri, Libyan academic and journalist. Thank you both for being with me. Well, Paul, let me start off with you. Why do you think we have seen an increase in the amount and severity of attacks by the regime on the West Bank this year?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Marzia. The number of attacks and the number of deaths is constantly increasing. It has been for decades, not simply years or months. And the Israeli policy appears to be to gradually heat up the pot in which the frog is cooking, and so that those of us who are observers from outside get accustomed to this level of violence. They're taking actually a lot of their cue from the ethnic cleansing that the United States did of the North American continent. Hmm. And ultimately, they decimated the North American population. So that's what they want to do. Now, there's some impatience among some of the Israelis. They want to do it faster. Until now, at least, the Israeli authorities have tried to keep it somewhat under wraps so that we don't have an incident where 100 Palestinians are killed in one day, for example, mm-hmm. or something like that. But that's what they're doing. They're gradually increasing it so that it doesn't appear in the Western news. And they've been successful in limiting the exposure in the Western news.
Well, Mustafa, since the start of this year, as I said, at least 186 Palestinians have been killed on the West Bank alone. What kind of message do you think the regime is basically trying to send, one, to Palestinians, and two, to the rest of the world?
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank
first
you for
of
coming.
All, I think the main message the Israeli government is sending out is the fact that it's determined to make the world and the Palestinians, first of all, of course, forget any talk or any discussion or any debate about the idea, which is becoming increasingly impossible, the idea of the two-state solutions. Terrorist Netanyahu himself, as a prime minister, has repeatedly said this. I think the most recent statement to that effect he made about something like a week ago, that the whole world and the Palestinian first should forget the entire idea of the two-state solution. That's one thing. The other thing is the message for the Palestinians. We have to remember this is the most fascist government in the Zionist entity ever since it was created in 1948. And it's full of criminals who are ministers in this government, especially the Minister of Internal Security, who has repeatedly expressed the idea or supported the idea that Palestinians, wherever they are in the West Bank or in Jerusalem, around Jerusalem, or anywhere else in historical Palestine, they should be forced out of their homes, out of their lands. So this is the platform the current government of the Israelis was elected on, and they are trying to deliver, if you like, to their electorate that we are doing what we have promised you throughout the last 2 years. And the message to the world, most broadly, I would say, that the Israelis are telling the world, especially the United Nations and the big powers, their supporters, of course, like the United States, that we in Israel, we don't really give a damn. We don't care about what the international law says or what you like or you don't like, as long as we see our interests as Israelis, as the Zionist colonial power in the region in a certain way, and we are going to pursue those interests regardless of what you think or you believe, even if you are our allies like the United States.
Hmm. Well, Paul, if those Western supporters of the dream of the regime would put real pressure on the Zionist entity, do you think that we would see a different reality?
We would see it overnight. We would see it overnight if the United States decided that it was not going to support Israel anymore. Then Israel would cease to exist in an instant. But that's not the case, because the United States is, largely speaking, still, as it was two centuries ago, a racist country. And Israel is a racist country and becoming more racist. And as Mustafa said, this is the trend of Zionism. And Zionism is apparently the strategy of Zionism is to become more extreme. I say it's a strategy, not merely a development. It's a strategy because in order to create a Jewish state that's essentially exclusively a Jewish state, you need to get rid of the indigenous population, the Palestinians. And in order to do that, you need extremists more than anybody else. And the Israeli government and the Zionist movement are investing much more of their funding into the extremists who are get almost everything that they want in order to grow. And they're growing not only in their extremism, but also in their numbers. The birth rate among the extremists is much higher than the birth rate among the other Zionists in the state. So I think they see this as the future, even though this is not popular with the vast majority of Zionists outside of Palestine. In the U.S., for example, most of the American Jews, I would say, are opposed to a more racist form of Zionism. But that's not going to make
it. Let me just jump in here, Paul, with what you're saying. But when we talk about Zionists in general in the United States, you say that the majority of them, you believe, are opposed to a more racist form of it, but they do not say a lot against the Israeli regime on a day-to-day basis to begin with. So I guess it's all relative as far as when we're talking about how extreme the Zionists can be, because overall they support that Zionist entity. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Marcia. That's exactly the problem. They don't want, or many of them have abandoned Israel, but they haven't gone against it. They're sick of Israel and Zionism, but they haven't turned against it.
Right, right. Well, Mostafa, do you think the main reason that entities like the U.S., U.K., Canada, and other like-minded countries which support the Zionist regime, you think the main reason that they continue to support it is because they too are settler colonial states? I mean, basically, they're on the same page with Tel Aviv.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. With that point in particular, and the history, as our friend Paul said, I mean, the history of both the Zionist movement as well as the new nations, if you like, that emerged in North America, if you take the United States as an example, or Canada as an example for that matter, what happened was the eradication of the indigenous population of these places. So they achieved what they call a land without any population for, or people without, for a people without any land. So it's kind of the same basic principle that the Zionists have applied in Palestine ever since the 19th century, the start of their mass migration from different countries in the world to historical Palestine. And we also have to remember that the Israelis, and as well as the extreme Zionists, especially those responsible for helping Jewish people migrate to Palestine, they always encourage, if you like, the most rotten elements of society. Whereas, you know, any failed fanatic who lives in New York and having a difficult time making it, you know, his through his life daily because of expenses, because of the rise of cost of living and so on and so forth, they would encourage him to go to Palestine, where he will be welcomed, and then most likely he will get free housing or something, you know, other benefits just to stay there. When we have seen hundreds of criminals who actually migrated, especially from the United States, to historical Palestine and took over the Palestinian land, Palestinian homes, Palestinian apartment buildings, and so on and so forth. So whether, you know, these countries, you know, especially the United States, they do share what they call values of freedom and so on and so forth with Israel, which is not true, but they also share the basic fact that both of them came into existence at the expense of the indigenous population, as we have seen in North America, as well as in Palestine. So there is a kind of shared tragedy for the indigenous people in both situations. And for the United States to defend against that, so they don't want anybody to talk about this, what they would say, we are defending Israel, we are allies with Israel, because Israel represents freedom, represents the new world, represents the kind of openness and coexistence, but only for everybody else, if you like, who's Jews, but not for the Palestinians, not okay. For the Arabs.
Okay, okay. Well, Paul, why do you think Jenin has been targeted in the way it has this year? At least 10 of the Palestinians who've been killed on the West Bank have been from Jenin, and we saw the regime targeting the area from the air with drones recently, something they hadn't done, at least targeting from air, in years. So what's your assessment of what's going on there and why Jenin is being targeted in the way it has?
Well, Jenin was special even in 2002 when the Israeli military under Sharon had its incursion into West Bank cities, all except Jericho at the time, although they moved into Jericho later. And Jenin was, in a sense, one of the most difficult. the refugee camp in Jenin put up some of the greatest resistance to the extent that the Zionist military and its bulldozers and tanks leveled a quarter of the refugee camp during that time. And I think, if I remember correctly, the greatest number of casualties who were there. Well, it has always been a center of resistance, and that continues to this day. So that's one reason the Israeli forces have chosen it as a target. But there may be other reasons that we don't know about, such as that they want to cleanse that area as a priority before other areas. It's hard to say.
Right.
But certainly the courage of its fighters and the extent to which they have been able to mobilize their resistance, I think, is a major part of it.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
After more than 70 years of oppression by the Zionists, do you think that the regime's founders thought that they would have suppressed all Palestinians into submission by now to accept the Zionist regime? But the reality is couldn't be further from the truth. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, the main principal goal of the Zionist entities always has been and the crushing to know, you know, to know without any limits actually of any Palestinian descent, if you like, not just resistance or armed resistance. They have tried every imaginable, every evil tactic, if you like, to do so, but they have prevailed. And as we have seen in the example of Jenin, for example, I would like to point out for the audience here that there are two Jenins, if you like, in Palestine. One Jenin, the city whose history goes back to the 18th century, and the other one, or Jenin municipality or something a little bit bigger. And then we have the Jenin refugee camp, which was created in 1953, inhabited by those who were forced, those Palestinians, who were forced out of their homes, out of their lands, when Israel came into existence in 1948. And then more people came after the Israeli invaded and occupied the West Bank in 67. So Jenin, in a way, it's actually the refugee camp, the Jenin refugee camp, that's putting up the most resistance. And one of the striking features here, or notable things, is that most of the people who are operating there, mostly associated with the commands and structures of Palestinian resistance organizations like Islamic Jihad and Hamas in Gaza, which is not actually in the West Bank. What this tells us? It tells us that there is a new generation, you know, coming back to claim its right to the resistance. And the only way for the Israeli entity to end the problem in Jenin, for example, is let those people in the Jenin refugee camp, the solution is very simple. Let them go back to their homes and their lands, and their enterprises, which he confiscated in 1948 and following years, and there will be no Jenin problem in Jenin at all. But as long as those generations and their following those refugees, I mean, and their following generations are still refugees, they will never give up. Mm. So whatever Israelis would like to use, any kind of method, any kind of tactic or any kind of weapons, and they have used internationally banned weapons like phosphorus and other things, you know, it will fail. Ultimately, it will fail. Okay. You forced me out of my house. I will never give up. And if I die without getting back to my house, my sons, my daughters, my neighbors, they will never give up. It's going to be the same. So it's you know, if there is no return for the Palestinians, consequently, there will be no security for the Israelis, especially those who attempt to grab more Palestinian land by establishing what they call outposts, which are small colonies, actually, before the being developed into a proper standard colonies.
Well, Paul, in your perspective, what is key here in order for the Palestinians to, one, fight this repression and the continual Western support for the Zionist regime and ultimately become victorious over the Zionist entity?
Well, I think the key is, first of all, as Mustafa said, the Israelis do not have security, and they will never, ever have security. Never. They, as long as they remain racist, as long as they think of the Jews as a superior race on this planet, they will never have have security. And that's true for any other group of people who consider themselves above the rest of the people on this planet. But as far as the Palestinians are concerned, they're keeping they're maintaining their resistance. There are methods, we can argue about what methods are the most effective in fighting.
But you're saying resistance is key. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Resistance is the key. But I think that the resistance may not have the full effect until the disappearance of the influence of the United States.